You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby G and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to Rendezvous with a Writer. My name is Tom Swearingen, obviously not Jim or Bobby Jean Bell, the regular hosts of this program, who are away at the Western Writers of America Conference in Tulsa and asked me to fill in. I've had the privilege of doing that a few times, and it's always an honor. One of the things that comes with that invitation to host is to choose my own guest, and I have invited to be my guest tonight Rod Miller. There he is. Rod, you're in Utah tonight. Your office in Utah, is that correct?
Yes, I live in a town called Sandy. That's a suburb of Salt Lake City.
Okay, and I'm in Western Oregon, and the engineer Sam is in L.A., and somehow we're all together and looking forward to our conversation. I want to read an introduction about you, but I want to let people know that I first became aware of Rod Miller through his cowboy and Western poetry. We're going to talk mostly about his novels this evening, unless he wants to talk about something else. But I first became aware of Rod's cowboy poetry when the Center for Western and Cowboy Poetry, the late great Western Center for Western and Cowboy Poetry, published a number of his poems. And I am a Western poet myself, and really Rod's writing really caught my attention. And so I've been paying attention to him for a few years now, and had an opportunity to meet Rod at a cowboy music and poetry gathering where he was mostly talking about his books and featuring his books. And quite an author of all manner. We share a little bit more of official introduction to Rod. Rod Miller writes novels, short stories, poetry, history, and magazine articles about the American West, with some two dozen books and scores of magazine articles to his credit. Recognition for his work includes 4 Western Writers of America Spur Awards, 2 Western Fictioneers Peacemaker Awards, 2 Westerners International Poetry Awards, and the Academy of Western Artists Poetry Book of the Year Award. Raised in a cowboy family in a small town in Utah, Miller rode for the Utah State University rodeo team. He's worked as a cowboy, ranch hand, farm laborer, in an underground hard rock mine, as a radio disc jockey, in television broadcasting and production, and spent decades as an advertising agency copywriter and creative director. Now retired, he spends his time writing about the West. Rod Miller.
So, Rod,
I don't know if you know this, but we share a little bit of history, because I spent decades myself as a copywriter and a creative director in advertising agencies. And some days that's probably tougher than riding Bronx or working in an underground mine.
Yeah, sometimes those client meetings can get pretty rough.
Yeah. So tell me, I'm curious, the transition from advertising writing, I have my own sense of what that was like, transition from advertising writing to novels and poetry, any similarities, differences? Tell us a little bit about how that worked.
Well, you know, I guess I'll start at the beginning, maybe. I've always been able to write. I mean, starting back in junior high when we had a sort of a newspaper that got cranked off the mimeograph machine, you know, and I wrote for the high school newspaper and the college newspaper. And then I went into advertising, spent 40 years doing that. But I honestly never considered myself a writer. You know, writers were people who wrote books and poems and you know, even magazine articles, although I had done a little bit of that kind of stuff. And I never had any training in creative writing. My degree was in journalism. So, you know, I had some background in that kind of writing, but I guess I was probably in about my mid-40s when I just got curious. You know, I'd always been involved with cowboy culture in one way or another, even though I was somewhat removed from it, having to work in the cities all the time. But I got curious and wondered if I could write a poem. And I don't know why. You know, it was just curiosity. And so I started trying to write poetry, and I knew nothing about it, so I kind of homeschooled myself to learn something about poetry and how it works. And I started submitting poems to magazines. Back then, American Cowboy and Western Horseman both published a lot of cowboy poetry, and both those publications started publishing my poems, and that was kind of, you know, it encouraged me, which is probably their mistake. And after a while, I wondered, well, gee, you know, could I write a short story? And so I tried writing a couple short stories and got some of those into Manpole. And then I wondered if I could write a novel. And so I wrote a novel and got that published. And so it's just, you know, it just kind of came along out of curiosity, the whole thing. And for several years there, I continued to work in advertising, and I liked that work. It was a good job. I enjoyed it all those years, but, you know, I think I just, like I say, I was curious as to whether I could actually write something other than advertising. And so that's kind of how it came about. And then when I reached retirement age, I decided, you know, that's it for advertising. I'm done with that now, and I'll devote more of my time to these other kinds of things. So that's kind of what I've done.
Well, maybe it may be obvious why you write Westerns, given your rodeo and family background, but maybe not. Is that particularly what drew you to writing Western literature?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I grew up, you know, my dad was a working cowboy for a good part of our lives growing up. And I was, as you mentioned, on the rodeo team. I participated in rodeo for years, and I knew cowboys. That's pretty much what I knew. The town I grew up in was 400 or 500 people. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of cultural activities there. You know, you just knew the people you knew. And so it was all part of the cowboy culture that I was with. I was interested in the history of the West from a very early age. It just was what appealed to me. And they tell you to write what you know. And so I started, I guess, building on that, but soon found out it was a lot more interesting to write about what you don't know. So while I stayed with the West and with Western history and culture and all those kinds of things, I delved into other areas that I wasn't familiar with to learn more about. So, yeah, the West has been kind of a natural thing, and there's enough out there that I think you could write about the West for 2 or 3 lifetimes and never begin to get to it all.
Okay, so you have, in fact, I'm hearing an echo, but maybe not. So you have written some other genres. I crime and romance and fantasy and those sorts of.
No, not at all. I didn't mean to imply that. Everything I've written about is about the West. It's Western stuff.
Okay.
It's not all the traditional kind of Western, you know, what you think of as Louis L'Amour or Zane Grey, that kind of stuff. I mean, it's, I try to, you know, make it a little more in depth, and I think Lauren Esselman, who's one of my favorite authors and has been a real friend to me, he said that what you need to do to get your Westerns to take a step beyond the tradition is to give the characters, or the reader has to believe that the characters have a life off the page. So, you know, you try to not use so much the stereotypes and all the typical things that you find in Western. You kind of try to do things a little differently. And so I think that's how I've approached it. But it's all been about the West. Some historical fiction, some just pure fiction. I've written some history. I've got four books that deal with the history of the West in one way or another. But primarily, I've been writing novels. But again, they're all about the West.
Yeah. So not tempted to write science fiction.
No, you know, I've never really been drawn to science fiction or any other genre, really. I do read outside of my interest in the West. I'll read a lot of things, but science fiction isn't really one of them, or fantasy. I remember a writer friend of mine asked me about that one time, and my response was that there's enough weird stuff that goes on in the real world without having to get off into make-believe worlds. So it's, you know, it's just, you know, I stick with what I kind of know, I guess.
Yeah. All right.
Want to know.
I'm fumbling with an earbud here because I was hearing some echo that might have been coming through a speaker. So pardon me for fumbling there while you're talking. Well, let's I want to make sure that we have some sample of your writing. I've got more questions to ask. And before I do that, I noticed that you're having a beverage there, Rod. And I was tempted very much. I have some water here, but I was very much tempted to have a beverage. I was thinking whiskey, rye or corn, rum, or bottle of beer, but it is not cold. And people who have read this book, All My Sins Remembered, will know the reference to whiskey, rye or corn, rum, a bottle of beer. But it is not cold.
It is not cold. Why don't you
tell us a little bit. This is a fabulous book. And this was, you know, All My Sins Remembered, according to the Michael Zimmer Spur Award winner and Western Heritage Wrangler Award winner, said one of the more powerfully haunting novels to come along in years. And it is haunting. New York Times bestselling author Lauren Estelman, who mentioned earlier, said All My Sins Remembered is destined to join the ranks of the frontier classics. So why don't you talk to us a little bit about All My Sins Remembered, and maybe you talk into reading, sharing a little sample of that.
Sure. You know, that's really kind of a strange book. I'm not really sure where it came from. When I write, I don't spend any time ahead of time figuring out the plot. I don't really know where things are going to go. I just get some characters and an idea, and then I just run with it. But this book took that kind of to an extreme. And I didn't really know how to describe the experience until a couple months ago. I review books for the New York Journal of Books, and I was given a book to review by a lady named Sarah Crouch. The book was called Middle Tide, and it's about a guy who had written a book, and now he's writing another book, and the experience for him was different. And she described that this way. She said, this time around, he let his words run unrestrained across the page, often shocked at the twists and turns that presented themselves as he wrote. It was like he wasn't writing the book at all, but rather reading it as it emerged from somewhere in his brain he didn't quite have conscious access. And that's really a pretty good description of what it was like to write All My Sins Remembered. And, you know, you write a book, you send it off to the publisher, and then months later you get stuff back to proofread and to and to check the galleys. And when I was reading that stuff, when I was going through reading this book at that point, there were parts of it I honestly didn't recognize. Did I write that?
Right.
It was it's just bizarre. But it is a really strange book. I mean, there were a couple of things I wanted to try. You know, I just kind of wondered, could you write a book without anybody in it having a name? And so there is none of the characters in this book have names. And there's a, kind of a point to that, I think, that I probably came up with after the fact, was that the main character in this book is, you know, almost less than human, I guess. And so by not naming characters, I think it kind of plays into that dehumanizing aspect that's part of it all. And so I will read you a little bit of this.
Hang on just for a second, because what I want to do is I want to go real quick to a sponsor.
Okay, absolutely.
And I think what you've just shared so far has people really curious now to hear. And so when we come back, you can share a little bit of the book. All right.
Maybe they'll come back.
Yeah, this is a spoffer. Out West Shops.
Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shops, a bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com. Find books and CDs on the menu. Choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
All right. Well, wonderful.
Okay, we're back.
Now, let's hear a little bit of All My Sins Remembered.
All right. I should preface this with saying this passage that I've chosen is kind of misleading because the character here, the main character, runs a roadhouse that's on a desert road that gets very little traffic. And most of the people who stop by his place don't enjoy the same kind of treatment that I'm going to read about here. We loaded the few boxes onto the buckboard. I stowed the rifle on the floor beneath the seat. The little revolver nested in an old holster I had tacked to the sideboard within reach of the seat. I drove over to the windmill to fill the water keg and hollered out to the children to come and load up when finished. They crossed the yard, the woman with them, leading the little girl by the hand. I lifted her onto the seat and she slid to the middle. The boy and girl climbed up on either side. I did not offer any advice. The children were resilient and had made it this far on nothing but hope. The boy and girl seemed hesitant, but that look of determination still set the girl's features. The little girl wiped away a tear as she watched the woman walk away. Then she looked at me with an altogether different expression, as if she saw something in me the others could not see. She held her gaze as the mule leaned into the harness and the buckboard rattled away across the sagebrush flat toward the slope up to the Saddleback Pass. For as long as I could make out the figures on the wagon, the little girl sat cocked on the seat, watching me.
Yeah, wonderful. And you're right, their experience was not the typical of the visitors.
he was not that nice to very many people.
No, and I don't want to give the spoiler alert to everybody, but the title "All My Sins Remembered" suggests that there's some badness that happens. My wife read it after I did, and I could tell, you know, every once in a while she'd be reading and cross the room, and she would just go, "Oh my!"
You know, there's a story behind that title. That line, of course, is from Hamlet's soliloquy in the Shakespeare play. And my wife and I were watching that play one time, and that line somehow just kind of jumped out at me. And it came together with another memory that years years before, there was a lady who had written a book about an incident back in Missouri called the Hans Mill Massacre, where a dozen or so people were killed and they threw the bodies down a well. And the title she had was The Bones in the Well. And that title, that, you know, that just stuck with me. And so those two things just kind of came together. And I thought, you know, bones in a well, that could be a way your sins were remembered. And so that's where that whole thing started. It just came from there, and away it went. It just kind of went off on its own after that.
Well, it's a wonderful, wonderful book. You mentioned your wife. Do you, and I mentioned mine, do you show your work to her or anyone else in when books are in progress? What's your approach to that?
You know, I don't. I guess I'm kind of out in left field that way compared to a lot of writers. Most writers probably, they'll join up with a critique group and pass their stuff around. And I've just never been drawn to that. And my wife is perfectly content not to have to read the stuff I write. And so I write it, and the only person who gets to see it before it's published is the acquisition editor at whichever publisher the book goes to. And so I don't know why that's the way I like to do things. I just do.
Interesting. All right. What is the most difficult part of your writing process? For somebody like you, there's nothing difficult, right? It's just a breeze.
Well, the hard part is waiting. Uh-huh. I mean, it takes a long time. I mean, not necessarily to write the book, although that takes a long time. But, you know, you send it off to the publisher, and it can take months before anything happens. I mean, they've got their catalogs all lined out, and they've got all these slots to fill. And it can take a while for your book to get to the, you know, its place in the line to get up there and get published. And that's the hardest part. The writing is not difficult. I mean, I like it. That's why I do it. I like to research. I like to do the research that it takes to get everything right about a book. There are always mistakes, but I make a big effort to make sure that what I'm saying is in keeping with the times and in keeping with the truth of the times. And writing is, it's fun. You know, I like it. I hear people talk about how hard it is and how they have to slave over it. How, you know, it's like, you know, there's an old saying, you just sit at the typewriter and open a vein and bleed. Well, you know, if it's like that, why do it? You know, I would not do that. I mean, I don't want to spend my time not having any fun. You know, writing is good fun, and I just love doing it.
Wonderful. All right. So when I read All My Sins Remembered, and just within this last year, it seemed to me that that was a fairly new book. It was published within the last couple of years. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think it was 2022, I think.
Yeah, and then I get that one read, and then I see that you had another one come out just a couple months ago, Outlaw Man, is that right? The Life and Times of Matt Warner.
Yeah, Outlaw Man came out January, February, I think, and then just within the last few weeks, another one called Justice and Mercy.
Yeah.
And in between, I mean, before Outlaw Man, there was another one called Silver Screen Cowboy that came out. So, you know, that it's All My Sins Remembered is, you know, it's kind of back there in my history a little bit now. Although it's still, you know, people always ask me what I think my best book is. I think probably that one.
Yeah.
Although it's, you usually tell those people, which one of your kids do you like best? Because it's the same kind of thing, but
sure,
yeah, it's they're, you know, they just keep coming. I mean, the two I've had this year in the late in the year, another publisher's bringing out a trilogy, a three-part series of books about a bounty hunter, and they'll come out, I think, September, October, and December. So, you know, five novels in a year is a lot.
That is a lot. Can you share some of Outlaw Man, The Life and Times of Matt Warner?
Sure.
Talk a little bit about that and give us a sample.
This one is historical fiction, which means it's based on real people and real incidents, although presented in a fictional way. You still try to get the facts right, you know, make sure you don't misrepresent what the people were like and what happened. And the thing that attracted me to this book, there's a guy named, well, his name was Willard Erastus Christiansen. And he was born here in Utah and lived here till he was about 14 years old when he hit the trail, and he became an outlaw. I mean, he had a brother-in-law named Tom McCarty, who was a pretty practiced kind of outlaw, and Willard, who changed his name to Matt Warner, got into cahoots with his brother-in-law Tom, and they and got involved in serious crime. I mean, before that, you know, Willard or Matt had been involved in some rustling and a few hijinks here and there, but Tom really introduced him to what the outlaw life was really like. And between the two of them, they introduced another man to the outlaw life, a young man that they met in Colorado when they were over there racing horses. And that guy went on to become maybe the one of the most famous outlaws in the Old West, certainly. He's named Butch Cassidy. At least that's the name he's known by. But Matt Warner and Tom McCarty taught Butch Cassidy how to be an outlaw. So Warner was he was wanted throughout the Intermountain West, Utah, clear down into the southwestern deserts, all the way down into Mexico. He was wanted in Idaho, Oregon, Washington, and into Montana. I mean, he was quite a desperado. And he ended up eventually, because of a lot of things that happened in his life, he did a stretch in prison. When he came out of prison, he promised to change his ways and become a lawman. And he actually spent several years as a deputy county sheriff in Carbon County here in Utah. And he was a justice of the peace and worked for the police department in some capacities. But that contrast of being a notorious outlaw and a respected lawman just kind of struck a chord with me. You know, he's an outlaw and he's a lawman, so Outlaw Man. And that's where the title of this book came from. And this little passage I'd like to read is fairly, Matt is, hasn't really got out onto the outlaw trail yet. He's at a place called Diamond Mountain in northeastern Utah. And he's been rustling cattle and rustling horses. And he's got a ranch up there. And he's, you know, 14, 15, 16 years old at this point, just a kid. But one day he meets somebody from his past. And this book, by the way, is written and narrated by somebody else. I mean, there's a voice here, you hear an old man whose voice you'll hear here. That's the voice we'll hear along with the guy who's the other principal character in the telling of these stories. So the old man chuckled and wagged his head. He told the story between bites while chewing and after swallowing. It seems that one day a young man rode up where Matt was working, and the sight of him put the fright into Matt. It was an old friend from back in Chicken Creek, and a brother of the boy Matt had beat to death. I should stop and mention he left home at 14 years old because he got in a fight over a girl and beat this guy. So Matt kept a hand close to his gun as he figured the kid had come to kill him. But the boy never let on that he was anything but glad to see his old friend and was befuddled by Matt's standoffishness. "What's the matter of you, Will? You ain't acting right." "First off, don't call me Will. I don't go by that name no more. Nor Willard, nor Christiansen. Around here, they call me Matt." Matt Warner. I'd be obliged if you do the same. Sure. I guess you know why I'm a mite suspicious. I reckon you've come to kill me. The boy could not speak for a time, overcome by surprise. Kill you? Why the hell would I want to kill you, Will? I mean, Matt. Well, hell, it ain't no hard thing to figure out. I done went and killed your brother. It wouldn't surprise nobody if you was to want to revenge me. The boy laughed. Killed my brother? There ain't a one of my brothers that's dead. They're all still a-breathing, every one of them. Leastways, they was when I left home a few weeks back. Now, it was Matt's turn for a round of speechlessness. Then, but you was there. You saw me beat hell out of him with that fence board. When I finally quit, when I was pulled off, that is, his head wasn't nothing but mush. There ain't no way he could have lived through that. The boy smiled again. Well, he did. He weren't no better off for having his head pounding on like that. But I don't guess he was any the worse off for it either. So that's a little bit of Matt Warner as a young man.
Yeah, interesting.
He actually did believe that he had killed this kid. I mean, they got in a fight over a girl, and he pulled a picket off a fence and just went to wailing on him.
Yeah.
And the guy was older and bigger than Matt, so, you know, he didn't, I guess, feel too bad about beating him with a board, but he thought he'd killed him, so he ran home and saddled a horse, and away he went.
Yeah.
Never came home again.
That's crazy. Well, it's another great sounding book. I'll have to get my hands on that, and I will.
Oh, please do.
I think there's an Oregon outlaw named Henry Vaughn that I think was connected to McCarty's. He was a horse thief and cattle thief, and I think there was some connection later on up in Oregon, Washington, and Idaho.
Yeah, and there may well have been. Matt spent quite a bit of time up there.
Yeah,
with Tom McCarty and Bill McCarty, and there was a cousin George, and there was a bunch of them.
Yeah,
they committed a lot of crimes up there.
Yeah,
and they probably did cross paths or.
Yeah, I think off the book, but I think Henry Vaughn was an in-law. I think he married into the McCarty family, and so they were they ended up sort of elevating the crime game in Henry's world. So, yeah.
Yeah, Tom McCarty was good with that. He'd turn amateur outlaws into professionals.
Mm-hmm.
He did that a lot.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. Watching the time here. We've got a couple more minutes before I want to take another commercial break. And then we're going to talk about Justice and Mercy. And you say that's just been released?
Yeah, the paperback version's out. I'm not sure if they've released the ebook yet.
Okay.
I don't really know anything about ebooks, but they have them, you know.
I read my first ebook just a couple of weeks ago. I was going to be out of town and I didn't want to carry a book, and so I downloaded an ebook, an autobiography and or memoir, and I like turning pages in a book and kind of seeing the progress, but it was interesting. It was an easy way to read, adjust the font size real easy, and mm-hmm. old guy like me, that was handy.
I've yet to try that, but I always tell people that the flight attendants have never asked me to close my book to prepare for takeoff and landing.
Yeah, good
those
point.
E-books, you know, you have to shut them down.
Yeah, so. your battery on your paperback doesn't go out.
Right?
Interesting. Well, let me do this, then that way we can. I'm going to go to another commercial, the last one for this show, from a new sponsor, Blue Cottage Agency.
Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. experienced, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Yeah, there you go. Welcome them as a sponsor. And so why don't we just, unless you want to say something more about Outlaw Man, share the newest, Justice and Mercy, and then I think we'll still have time. You got me really curious to learn a little bit more about the trilogy that we can look forward to. But what's Justice and Mercy about?
Well, it's where Outlaw Man is based in history. Justice and Mercy is just pure fiction. I just made it up. Looked kind of like All My Sins Remembered, you know, it just came out of nowhere. And I guess there's some level of might have been inspired by Judge Roy Bean, who was kind of a law unto himself. And so I invented this situation where there's this river that runs through a valley, and on one side of the river is one county and the other side of the river is another county. But in the middle of the river is a fairly good sized island that used to be kind of a peninsula or a bar on the river, but got cut off and became an island. And this guy named Justice, he decided that, you know, he could build a town on this island. So he did. And he, you know, there's this town out there on this island, and he owns the land. He owns all the buildings. He owns lots of the businesses, and the ones he doesn't, he owns the buildings that they're in, and he leases them out to the people who operate them. And he just controls everything. He's the mayor and holds every position of responsibility that there is on the island. But what he likes most is being the judge. So he has a saloon, and when he has occasion to hold court, he drags out a table and puts it up on the dance hall stage and wraps himself in a Navajo robe for his judge's robe. And he's got this big black leather law book that he sits on the table with him, and he has a dog who sits on a stool next to him. The dog's named Twy, has three legs. So they call him Trois, which would be French for three. But they don't know that, you know, they don't know what that means. It's just Trois. So anyway, he holds court in the saloon. And as I mentioned, he doesn't owe any allegiance to either of the counties. Sometimes they try to come and raise a ruckus, and he gets rid of them. And sometimes the state will come along and try to collect taxes or something, and he finds a way to get rid of them and sends them away. And so, you know, it's just him on this island. And the passage I'll read to you, this takes place in his courtroom in the saloon. And what had happened was he owns a butcher shop, a meat market on the island. So now and then he'll make a deal with some of the outlying ranchers. They'll bring in a bunch of cattle, and he'll keep them and butcher them as needed to supply the town with meat. And some cowboys had brought in a few head of cattle, and being in town, they thought they'd celebrate a little bit, and it got a little bit carried away. And there was an incident that actually happened in Cheyenne, Wyoming, back in the wild days. And I'd used this incident in another book as well, where these cowboys who were having too much fun put a saddle on a cranky old steer and rode it through the streets of Cheyenne. And of course, this mule wasn't, or this steer wasn't broke to ride. So he's bucking and pitching and ends up jumping through a store window and then jumping back out. And the guy managed to get him rode, but then he got arrested. And in this book, he's been arrested for all kinds of crimes, you know, disturbing the peace and damaging property and blah, blah, blah. And so he's now in court. And he's been accused, and all the charges have been read, and the trial has been moving along. And then the cowboy, his name's Red, he says, "That steer don't belong to the ranch." The judge says, "What?" like I said, that steer, it don't belong to the ranch. As before, Justice Payne stuttered and stammered, searching for words. Well, who then? Who? Was all he could muster. Red smiled wide. He turned to the right, left, spreading his smile over all assembled. Why, Judge, that steer, he belongs to you. What? He's yours, Judge. Red turned and pointed to one of the cowboys on the sidelines. That feller over there, the one in the blue bib front shirt with the gravy stain on it and wearing that big black hat, he's the foreman out to the ranch. And he's got a bill of sale right there in his pocket showing that steer we've been talking about and all them other beeves we brung to town was sold to the butcher shop 3 days ago. And unless I've been misinformed, that butcher shop, it belongs to you. Again, the crowd erupted into applause and celebration led by the cowpuncher. Even Twa lifted his snout skyward and let out a happy howl. Without a word, without so much as a whack of his gavel, Justice Payne backed away from the table, picked up his big black law book, and left the bench with the woolen Navajo blanket he wore as his judge's robe, waving like a flag of surrender behind him.
Yeah.
So, well, we got away with it.
Yeah, wonderful.
But, I mean, that's justice. That's part of the story. Then there's Mercy. Mercy is a feisty young Irish girl who has made her living in the dark of night for several years. And she ends up on the island and she opens a brothel. And Justice, the judge, he's really intimidated by this young lady. I mean, she's forceful and opinionated and speaks her mind and is smart. And since, I mean, she built this fancy brothel, but it's on Justice's land, like everything in the island. And it's actually his building. He holds title to the building, but she runs the business and pays him a percentage and pays lease and pays the rent. And he's just, I mean, Justice is he's kind of a miser. You know, he's a penny pincher and he thinks everybody's out to get him. And so he's convinced that Mercy's pulling one over on him. And so they're just all the time like this, you know, but it's, I mean, there's a lot of conflict in the book, but the book at the same time is very lighthearted. I mean, it's just, it's even, you know, it's funny in places, quite humorous, but it's all based on this conflict between Justice and he's of the opinion that he's running this island and this town all wrong and they could do things in a lot better way. And so she's always agitating and trying to get change and he's always pushing back. So it's, you know, this conflict between justice and mercy is what drives that story.
Intriguing. Well, tell people where they can find your books. Everybody's all interested now. Where do they buy a Rod Miller book?
Well, you know, like pretty much every book by every author in every country in the world, they're on Amazon. And I have a website that they can visit that has links to the books either on Amazon or at the publisher's site. The website is writerrodmiller.com, and so you know all of my books are on there with links. Bookstores can order some of the titles. You know, they're out there with all the wholesalers and that kind of that usual kind of book selling thing, but most of the books nowadays are sold online, either Amazon, Barnes and Noble, or other online sellers like Bobby Jean's Place. You know, these online sellers are really where books are bought now. Yeah. So they're all available there.
Yeah. Well, I think it'd be appropriate to. I'm glad you mentioned Bobby Jean's Out West Shop affiliate page on bookshop.org. That'd be my choice.
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be a good place to start.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't think Amazon needs our support.
No, I think you're probably right. And you already mentioned what's coming next, the trilogy. We've got about 5 minutes to go in this, and about a minute of that's going to, I'm going to use that to talk about next week's deal.
Okay.
Are there any last thoughts that you wanted to share, the questions that you wanted to answer that I haven't asked?
No, I mean, you've kept me thinking the whole time.
Right.
So that's good. No, the book's coming out in the fall. As I said, it's a three-part series featuring a bounty hunter named Matt Crowder. And the overall title for the three-book series is The Hunting of Man, which is from a quotation by Ernest Hemingway that says, I'll just have to paraphrase it here, that says, once you've been involved in the hunting of man and enjoyed it, you don't really want to do anything else after that. That's kind of what drives you. And so this bounty hunter, he's a man hunter, of course. And in each of the books, he's going after a different outlaw and or outlaws, and you know, all kinds of adventures and stuff happens and things get in the way. And so it's just, you know, they're bounty hunter books.
Yeah. All right. So that one is awaiting publication.
Do
you have others on the drawing board, so to speak?
Not at present. When I wrote those three in kind of a short period of time, and so I was kind of, you know, ran down. I still write all the time. I mean, I've written several short stories since finishing those novels. But there will be another novel coming along anytime now. You know, they just kind of show up and you have to sit down and write them. You can't help it. You just got to do it. But
but
of late, it's been more short stories, which I love to write as well.
Yeah. Do you ever write poetry? Do you still write poetry at all?
Once in a while, you know, not as much as I used to. You know, I still love to write poetry, and I'll write one once in a while when something bubbles up to the surface. But I wrote a lot of poems over a lot of years, and you know, I don't think I ever said everything I need to say or want to say, but a lot of it I have. So they show up from time to time.
Yeah, you're good. Hopefully we'll see some more of that, and look forward to yet more from the prolific pen of Rod Miller. So for those that are just now joining, as we wrap up, the guest has been Rod Miller, a prolific novelist and short story writer and poet. And my name is Tom Swearingen, filling in tonight for Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, who are away this week at the Western Writers of America Conference in Tulsa. They will be back next week with their author guest is Mike Trigg, who has a new psychological thriller out named Burner. And you tune in and find out what that's all about. And in just a minute, we're gonna hear the closing theme music, and that music courtesy of the Hot Texas Swing Band, song called Hot Texas, which also opened the show. Appreciate their contribution. And real quick, got 30 seconds or so, Rod, or a minute. What do you write? What do you enjoy reading yourself? Particular authors, particular genres?
You know, I guess it's no surprise that most of what I read is about the West, although I read widely and I read a lot. But the contemporary authors I really admire be Lauren Esselman that we've mentioned, Michael Zimmer whose name came up, Elmer Kelton, the late Elmer Kelton, the late Win Blevins, the late Max Evans. All of these are writers that I really admire because they try to push those books, you know, beyond the traditional shoot 'em up kind of Western into something bigger.
All right. Well, I also want to thank Sam, the engineer back in L.A. He's about to push the button and send us out. So good night, everybody.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Sam.